It's not like Yom Ha'atzmaut where everyone's celebrating and it's the whole country. It's definitely different, that a different feeling and a different overall, I think.
Part of what shifted, at least to my ears, is the difference between singing at the top of your lungs, maybe at an inappropriate time, Am Yisrael Chai, meaning the people of Israel are alive, right? We are here, that kind of thing, as compared to what has become a chant and a loud one, even if it's by very few people, it is still done loudly. And if, as you say, Shoshana, the optics are not good where the words are. And I'm quoting here, let's be very careful about that. Death to Arabs. Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with
Shoshana Keats-Jaskel.
Our topics today are fraught, I would say. We have had a busy week in Jerusalem, a busy week in Beit Shemesh, a busy week in Israel overall. We know that you are listening to us after we are recording. That is the way this works. What that means then is that things may develop in the interim from the time that we record till the time that you hear this. We're talking about current events. And when that happens, we are always a little bit nervous that what we are saying will have become outdated. So recognize that we're going to be talking about what we colloquially call the flag march, and we will get to that momentarily. But first, we have some really big this happened of this week.
Yes, we have a government, which is super exciting.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. It was something I actually wanted to speak about, I think it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and Anne's like, but what if it doesn't happen? We can't talk about it. Apropos of how she introduced us. So yes, we are very glad to be able to say that we have a government. And not only do we have a government made of left, right, and center, there are a record 9 female ministers.
Out of 27.
I thought 28, but something like that. Nobody's really sure exactly how many.
Because they keep trying to reduce the number of ministers, and then they're still growing.
I think there are 28 ministers, which is far down from the 36 the last government had anyway. 9 females, 1 Ethiopian Israeli, 2 disabled, one of whom is deaf and one of whom has muscular dystrophy, a Muslim Arab, a Druze Arab, a gay man. It's actually a very, very diverse government, and we're very excited.
Of course, this is part of the reason that people are nervous that the government won't last. But I say if they can get this to work with this diversity, they might actually get some things done on the things that they agree on. We're not getting into the politics of it. We have a problem also, however, Shoshana, of this happened. Exactly this. These 9 women in government, of course, make a challenge for the Haredi publications to put a picture of the government and the government, it's the ministers. We've had this, it's the difference of having vocabulary coming from the United States and needing to revise it for Israel, because we're not talking about the entirety of the parliament, that's the entirety of the Knesset. This is the ministerial crew. I'm sure there's some formal name for this. Of course, they took an honorary picture. They took a picture with President Ruvi Rivlin. It's a really nice picture. There have been many, you know, mock-ups of just the headshots in the newspapers. And then it comes to the Haredi papers and they take that same picture. What do? You can all guess. You all know. They blur them out.
Mm-hmm.
So that also happened in this happened of this past week.
So very interesting, though. There's one female minister who's actually Mirav Micheli, the head of labor, and she actually... she's a feminist and she talks about this a lot. She actually quipped about it on Twitter. She wrote, whoever does the photoshopping for Hamodia should get a raise because there's just so many more women to Photoshop out now.
It's mocking in the best possible way, because it is something that is, on the one hand, very frustrating. And then I heard a rebuttal or a response, or whatever, somebody who was complaining back from the Haredi world, where they said, they know that we do this. Why are they up in arms over the fact that we're blurring the pictures of women? They know that we blur the pictures of women. We've been doing this for years. Why are they still upset? And I'm thinking, we've been trying to get you to change it for years. Why not just go back to showing the pictures of women? We're talking about headshots of ministers of government. There is nothing inappropriate going on here.
And I can't wait till there's a female prime minister and see what they do about that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's bring it back to our discussion about the flag march. The flag march traditionally is held on Jerusalem Day, Yom Yerushalayim. This is the day that commemorates Israel's win of the Six-Day War, where Israel took back, conquered the Old City, including the area of the Kotel, the Western Wall. It began, I guess, as a mark of celebration and recognition of the reunification of Jerusalem in Israeli hands, to march and dance with Israeli flags and joy to come through the Old City down to the Kotel, because exactly that. It was a mark of celebration, which is what Yom Yerushalayim in my book should be all about. This year, Yom Yerushalayim was not only about celebration, because there had already been a great deal of tension. And Shoshana, maybe you can fill in some of this. We've talked about it a little bit in the past as well, right? There'd already been a good deal of tension on the Temple Mount, some provocative activity from the Arab sector, some police activity going in to subdue. People were up in arms. And then literally up in arms. Yeah. At exactly this, you know, this afternoon dancing through the Old City, what should have happened anyway, should have been this, we're going to talk about how it has morphed over time. But this year in particular, there was a recognition that the celebration could not really just be a celebration, because with all the tension going on, it was seen to be even more provocative than usual. And so they rerouted it, and then they canceled it. On Yom Yerushalayim, they canceled it. And
because
then,
of the rockets, yeah.
Well, no. And then within 2 hours, rockets had started flying. Meaning,
right.
There was a.
But they canceled it because there were threats of rockets.
There were threats of rockets. It was highly tense. And I think everybody who was not immediately planning to be in the march was kind of relieved that at least it was removed from the table of tensions of that day. I think there's some kids, you know, high school and post-high school kids were very excited to be in the march, and maybe they were disappointed. And I say, okay, but they're less maybe aware of all of the rest of what was going on that day. And then we had 11 days of rockets and retaliatory strikes. So I think that not having the march on Yom Yerushalayim of this year was reasonable. What they did was they said, well, you know what, we will reschedule it and everybody will have their opportunity to dance through the Old City. Really, this is all just background. And then we have, you know, let's talk about the ramifications of it. But what happens, of course, is that if this began in 67, I don't know literally when it began as a formal march, but I remember it from really too long ago to count, my year in Israel, when, yes, people danced their way, you know, into the Old City, both at night and in the day, if I recall correctly. And there was something that felt a little tense about it. They come in, the march comes in through the Old City, through the Arab Shuk, through the Arab Quarter. This was in my day, right? They've changed it since, and now they come in through the Damascus Gate.
The Damascus Gate, which is basically the Muslim quarter gate. It's like, it's in the East, you know, quote unquote, East Jerusalem. It's predominantly a Muslim area.
So there is this like impulse to say, see, Jerusalem, all of Jerusalem is in Jewish hands, is in Israeli hands, yay. And therefore, we're going to demonstrate that by putting ourselves in all of these locations. When I was part of the march, when I was 18 years old, and we marched in, I remember this, in the middle of the night. I didn't go down in the daytime. I went down in the middle of the night, and we go through the Arab Shuk, and people are banging on the, I don't know, the walls. There's so many people, and singing at the top of their lungs, An Yisrael Chai. And I'm sorry, even then, I felt like people are sleeping. Like, this is maybe a little bit inappropriate at 2 o'clock in the morning to be banging and yelling and what they were doing.
Not so nice.
It wasn't so nice, but it was in celebration. The tone was positive. The right. problem is that what has happened in the years since, and as I say, there's been a lot of years since, and I don't know exactly when it shifted, but it has been taken over by a much more politically right-wing, towards the extreme element of Israeli society. The people who get labeled, rightly or wrongly, but I think probably mostly rightly, as Kahanists.
I wouldn't say it was taken over. I would say that there are more people maybe of that, you know. I mean, my kids went, like the schools go. Certainly, I wouldn't say that it's been taken over, but I think the optics, or the loudest maybe is the right way to say it, are those who are definitely more right-wing leaning. It's not like Yom Ha'atzmaut where everyone's celebrating and it's the whole country. It's definitely different, that a different feeling and a different overall, I think.
Part of what shifted, at least to my ears, is the difference between singing at the top of your lungs, maybe at an inappropriate time, Am Yisrael Chai, meaning the people of Israel are alive, right? We are here, that kind of thing, as compared to what has become a chant and a loud one, even if it's by very few people, it is still done loudly. And if, as you say, Shoshana, the optics are not good where the words are. And I'm quoting here, let's be very careful about that, death to Arabs. Now, I don't think that the celebration march about Yom Yerushalayim should be about politics. But that's why I say that it, quote unquote, it's been taken over. I don't think it's been usurped in any kind of formal way at all. But I think that there has been a move towards, you know, we talk about the polarization of society. I think this has happened, the polarization. And part of what has happened is that the people who are considered extreme right wingers are now, the numbers have grown, or people feel pushed out of the center, or whatever it is. There are more people who subscribe to this vocabulary or who don't object to it, right? I think that there are plenty of people on the left who would object to it, but I think there's plenty of people on the right who might not say death to Arabs, but that doesn't mean that they're going to protest against it. And so what we end up with is the people who are saying the loudest things are heard the most, even if they're not the majority of the people.
Right. So it's interesting. When my kids would go, I didn't love it to begin with. Eventually, I asked my son not to go because he said that he doesn't. But there are people, as you said, who bang on doors or who are rude. And I said, that is not how we celebrate Jews being back in Jerusalem. That's literally the opposite of how Jews in Jerusalem or anywhere should be behaving. And I would like you not to be part of that. So what they would do is they would go to the Kotel and dance at the Kotel, but they wouldn't do that whole march to the Muslim quarter, because I just find that to be extremely distasteful and wrong. If you're sovereign somewhere, and we are, thank God, then celebrate that sovereignty by being the best you can be, by emulating, by being a role model, by showing that whoever lives with us is welcome and a part of the society. I don't ever want to see or hear the things that the worst of us say. I think this also happens before, meaning, where are they learning this from? Where are the parents? How does someone feel comfortable screaming death to Arabs? Now, I did spend Shavuot evening with a bunch of teenagers. They asked me to give a shiur, and I said 45-minute shiur is not exactly my thing, Torah shiur, to do. But then he said, you know what? It should be more of a discussion. It's 1 o'clock in the morning anyway. And he wound up having 3 different hour conversations with various aged adolescents and teenagers, boys and girls, over Shavuot night. And we spoke so much about what was going on in Ramla with the riots, the Arab riots, and the Jews in Bat Yam. And I think we spoke a little bit about this on a different podcast, just recapping, that there was a lot of fear and anger in the kids. And they were saying, I don't understand why we're held to this other standard, why we can't be angry, why can't we be, you know, this is a war and this is a culture clash and whatever. And I said to them, you can be angry and you can be scared, but you have to deal with that in the right way. And you have to not just say death to people and beat anybody up on the streets. Like, we have to be educating on top of that, right? We need to deal with our own extremists. You know, we talk about religious extremists, but we have to talk about this kind of extremism as well. And the people that I see chanting death to Arabs are younger kids, you know, the angry 15 to 17-year-old young men, or maybe older than that, I don't know. But if you look at that one video that's going around so much about with the Flag Day March, I see maybe, like, I don't know, 15 youngsters. That's the same video I see everywhere on Twitter. And it is wrong, 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 wrong. But can we not say that 3,000 people who marched in the march screamed death to Arabs? Because it's just not true.
I think 5,000, actually.
Whatever it is.
No, but I'm saying, like, meaning, yes, a lot of people come out. And yes, a small percentage of them are out of line.
Yeah, and we have to deal with that, meaning we have to own that. And Lapid did, and Bennett did. And they, you know, the people who are now currently the heads of our government to start, you know, to connect with our this happened, came out and condemned it. And that's what we need, right? We need leadership to say, this isn't who we are.
And by the way, Shoshana, one of the labor MKs, meaning the left side of our very diverse government, came out and said, this is the march. This is what we do. It's tradition. Like, not deal with it. I don't mean that he was rude. I mean that that there is still pride of place in a way that makes sense. So when people say, but so why is it controversial? Since when is this controversial? There should be no controversy about this. It's Jewish sovereignty. I think the answer is it became controversial because of the people who wanted to push the envelope. And then, of course, the flip side of it is that Hamas decides to get involved, if the Jews march in Jerusalem, we are going to send rockets from Gaza. Now, of course, that's ludicrous, meaning it's an excuse. There's no reason that Jews having a celebratory march anywhere in the country should make a difference to Hamas in Gaza, right? But they want the Jews gone out of the whole land. It's fine for them to make whatever excuses they want to send whatever rockets. I hope they don't send any more ever, right? The problem, of course, is that then because they've said this, then if, as you opened, Shoshana, with this concern that if there's no way to do it safely and if there's no way to do it respectfully and there's no way to do it without bringing out the police in droves to the Muslim quarter, then perhaps it shouldn't be happening. The problem is that the moment Hamas talks and yes. says, we're going to send rockets if you do this, then that puts Israel in this bind of like, we can't not do it because obviously yeah. we're not taking our orders from Hamas. And on the other hand, we want to do it in a careful, respectful way. I hope we want to anyway. And then again, we don't want to look like it's so much optics. We don't want to look like we're taking orders from Hamas.
Right. So we live in the Middle East. I think people need to remember that we live in the Middle East. We're not in America. We're not New York, California. Our neighbors still really don't want us around. You know, like we are, thank God, really strong and we're in a much different position than we were in 67 or 73 or even 82. But the point is that our neighbors don't want us around and our neighbors are genocidal maniacs. So we can't seem to, oh, you're going to do that? Okay, so we're going to change. That's just like you said, Anne, like we can't take our orders from Hamas. At the same time, we are strong and we are sovereign and we have to be smart and not just right. So what we should be doing, in my opinion, is have that march. But can we not bring it through the Muslim quarter and just be jerks about it? You know, because the truth of the matter is if we, the police, can't say you can keep your stores open, our people are going to be orderly, then we don't deserve to be marching there. I'm sorry, we just don't. So we have to go through another route.
Somebody made an important point about the stores being, you know, the stores, oh my goodness, they're losing business. So I grew up in a town called Arlington in Massachusetts. And every April 19th in Massachusetts is Patriots Day. And Patriots Day is the day that, you know, we, the Yankees, we fought back the British, right? The Redcoats mm-hmm. are coming, the Redcoats are coming. Paul Revere's ride and all of that. And there is a march down the main street of my town of origin, every April 19th, and it stops traffic. And that's that, right? Meaning like you're going to be late to work if you need to go to work and you need to cross that main street on this day. And people know this. So the fact that the stores have to be closed because of a crush of people doesn't bother me.
Is that the reason though? Is it because of the crush or because they can't guarantee the safety of
That was the next part of my sentence.
Okay. Right?
I mean, if it's because there's a crowd and it's just too much and you can't do proper business that way, then yeah, I think that once a year that there's a way to tough that out. But if the issue is that there's a concern that there's going to be marauding on the part of the Jewish marchers, so then we, from the internal side of things, we need to, you know, get rid of that. We need to make sure that there's no concern that there's going to be rioting or looting or marauding on the part of the Jewish marches. I think that that should go without saying, and unfortunately it does not. So that's why we're saying it, I hope, loud and clear. From the flip side of it, Shoshana, I sent you something. I had seen something somebody had written that said that basically, you know, these kids who are marching are basically, you know, criminals and give all of Zionism a bad name. And I feel like, also, that's maybe a little bit extreme.
Yeah, I mean, learn how to consume your news with a little bit of integrity and intelligence. Like, die. It's the same way I wouldn't judge 20 black people or 20 Latino people or whatever and extrapolate that to the entire population. Do me a favor if you see 20 kids being stupid jerks. I mean, everyone has their stupid jerks. We do,
too. So the one of the lines was something about the flag of Israel. Because these marchers are, you know, speaking out in such an inappropriate way, specifically the death to Arabs, you know, callers, and they're holding the flag of Israel, then the fact that the government allows that to happen besmirches the flag to begin with, and the entire government is complicit. And I keep thinking, like, I don't understand. We've just been talking and celebrating democracy and freedom of speech and all of this. And I think that it's important that we allow freedom of speech. On the other hand, I don't want anybody, you know, marching, praising Jerusalem, saying death to Arabs. Like it's a fine line here. Free speech often is, you know, can push that boundary of exactly that line, what's appropriate and what's not.
And we have to be good. We have to be better about, you know, we in general, the Jewish people, the Israeli people, have to be good about, you know, trying to heal the, we know this, we have to heal the rifts in our society, we have to do our best to moderate whatever. And I do really, really, really hope that this government, especially now that there's an Islamist or Muslim party in the, well, it's an Islamist party, but that's fine, Muslim party in the government, hopefully if they can get together, they can model that idea of, listen, you're here and I'm here and we none of us are going anywhere, so let's work together. I really hope that that's the future of this country, and God willing, God willing.
Shoshana, I want to throw you a bone here because I feel like this is the exact optimal platform to discuss, you know, the problem of extremism and that slippery slope into extremism that we've been talking about for, oh, I don't know, years.
Thank you. Is that my bone?
No, now you can talk about it. Now you can give a speech.
Well, I'm getting up on my soapbox. Seriously, though, Anne's right. If you want to know what's a big deal and you're thinking, like, I don't really understand what this is a big deal, talk to your kids and see sometimes, or talk to your friends and your neighbors, because I've had conversations that are very eye-opening with people that I never thought would say certain things. And then we talk about it a lot. And we say, you know, like, what do you mean when you say that? And how do you think that sounds to other people when you say it? And what do you really mean? And when you dig down into it, and this is what I had on Shavuos, when these guys were like, yeah, I would beat up an Arab on the street because they beat us up, so why shouldn't we beat them up? And they can't, you know. And I said, well, what does that mean? And what does that look like? Once we drilled down a little bit into those questions, and I didn't yell at them and tell them they were racists, I asked them to continue in this scenario and to tell me what it looks like. And in the end of the day, they walked it back because they realized that's really not who I am. That's really not who I want to be. And hopefully the next time they will not say that thing and they will reconsider. And I said to them, you're going to be soldiers in a few years. Is that really who you want to be and what you want to do? Think about it for a minute. Your older brothers, your older siblings are soldiers. Is that who you want to be? And you could see a little bit of that bravado. Remember, these are young, feisty, hormonal teenagers, and that bravado started to wear down a little bit. You can get through to people without calling them racist.
I would say sometimes that conversation is easier to have with feisty teenagers who are thinking and forming their own identities and getting there.
Very important.
Sometimes it's easier to have that conversation in a more open way with that population than with adults who sometimes, I think, surprise us with views that, like, you know, Shoshana, when we were preparing for the podcast, we didn't really talk about our own views. We just outlined what we're going to talk about. And then right as we went to record, Shoshana, you said to me, I haven't even asked you, but I'm assuming we're on the same page. And in this case, yes, it's true. We are, if not on the same page, then certainly very, very close. And that's not true of everybody that I assume is on my same page. I think a lot of people got surprised in this way, specifically in American politics with Donald Trump, who was a very divisive figure. I think some people were surprised that people they knew were pro Donald Trump. And I think other people were surprised that people they knew were anti Donald Trump. Right? Like, so yeah. I feel like there's something about that when it comes down to really the heart of the question of greater Israel and what are we supposed to be doing here with two populations that are laying claim to the same land. I think that we have some people who surprise us with their liberal views and some people who surprise us with their conservative. It's not conservative. It's not really the right, it's not the right divide, but the right wing and the left wing. And so I would say that whatever your views, you know, we at Chochmat Nashim are always going to take the position that extremism, taking the extreme view, is never going to work. Yeah. I mean, and when it does work, it's not for the better. So even if your views are more liberal, again, more left-wing or more right-wing, you know, the rhetoric, the level of rhetoric that I have seen in the past couple of days from people I know to be otherwise responsible people, not everything I've seen has been so responsible from both the left and the right, which is one of the reasons I thought that we should talk about this to point out, stop being extremist, stop being ridiculous, calm down, talk about it. Exactly what you said.
It's also important for people to know that you don't have to climb up that tree. Like, you can, it's okay to just say, gosh, you know what? I didn't think that was nice and that did bother me and I wish they didn't do that and that makes me uncomfortable and that's hard for me because I've always loved the flag march, but I wonder if the thing that I've loved is no longer the thing that I've loved and doesn't reflect my values and maybe I need to think about that. That's totally okay. That's actually really, really mature. Right?
And like, also you can then say, if you think about it long enough in advance, how do we work to get it back to be that thing that we love?
Good point, Anne. That's a very good point.
Okay, we're going to close, but first we must dish. My dish here, Shoshana, we did not talk about this in advance. My dish here is on the Israeli government. Because whatever your politics, and that's really not the issue here, right? Israel has a government. Their goals include passing a budget. And that sounds so simplistic because hasn't the country been functioning all these 2.5 years with no government? And the answer is, well, not really. There are certain things that have been coasting along through, certainly. And then there are certain things that have been big questions that left regular, ordinary people very tense. For example, daycare after-school programming was a big question for a little while. Chochmat Nashim, we were waiting and waiting to get our tax-free status approved. We had sent in, Shoshana, how many times did you get the forms filled out in triplicate? Such a little thing, but the right governmental office was not authorized to authorize. And then finally, we worked it out because a different organization took it upon themselves to get all of these amutot, all of these organizations, to get their tax-free status. Thank you very much. But the point is that that's not how government is supposed to work. It should have been a rubber stamp. It should have been, all the paperwork was in order, and then we waited for months. So these are very little things that become very big for just how regular people are functioning without a government. So having a government, and I happen to like the diversity of this government. I don't know if it's going to last more than a minute, but there's something really pleasing about having such a wackadoo range of people who don't agree on most things. And everybody keeps saying they just agree in their hatred of Netanyahu. And maybe that's true, except for that that was true to get them to the table. It's not true for how you go forward in governance. What they agree on is making sure that just regular people, of which I think we can count ourselves, can make sure to have tax-free status if they have an amuta that needs tax-free status, or that you can, you know, get your paperwork done, or you can do the regular things that we do in a regular way. Housing is too expensive. They're talking about hospitals in the north and in the south. And they're talking about fighting crime in the Arab sector, meaning like there are a lot of areas where all of these groups don't agree at all. And then there's the fact that they're coming together to make sure that life for the little guy is supposed to be functioning as it is. And this line of we'll get to the bigger issues of dispute down the road might not work forever, but it works for right now. And right now, this is what the country needs, I think, if I may be so bold as to have an opinion. You don't have to hate Netanyahu to think that the lockjam of the country was a problem for the country.
Actually, my dish is going to be, it's actually very, very interesting and very, very inspiring. The reason we have this amazing government is because, drumroll please, of women. What's really fascinating is that Lapid's negotiating team is almost entirely women. I think there's like one guy and the rest are women. And there was this whole item, if you look at our Facebook page, I reposted it, where his negotiating team, they go to a hotel and that's where they do all their conversations. They have 40 days to do it. They slept in the hotel and there's pictures of them like sitting in the hallways, eating food. They went back and forth to the parties. What can you compromise? What can you not give up? What are you willing to give for this? How much do you want that? And they didn't give up no matter what happened. They said, we're going to do this. We're going to get a government. And they were creative and they put egos aside and they said, the goal is the government. The goal is getting this to function. Who needs what? And they just were creative and thought of what, who could give where and how, and what means more to somebody else. And they put this together and that's how we got this government. I think we always talk about women in positions of influence is an important thing and women govern differently. And then there's that whole UN report about when women are involved in treaties, they last so much longer and they're more fruitful. It's worthwhile for us to think about this and to understand that in the Jewish community, it's important that we have women in positions of influence on committees, on boards, whether it's schools or shuls or Batei Din, as much as we can get them on, because things go better and more people are considered and things actually can be worked out. We know that when women are in the religious courts, then more cases are solved because they think creatively, well, how can we get this guy to give the get? And it's really important. So anyone out there listening, if you have that opportunity or that way to bring women involved, or if you're a woman, get involved, because wonderful, wonderful things happen when women are allowed to have their say. And so I just want to say that, like, kol hakavod to all these women I don't know. Thank you for making a government.
Because Judaism and apparently Israel are better when women are heard.
Amen. Can you hear us now?